Okay, guys, so let's just quickly summarize where we were. So the Gemara, or the Mishnah, had put various different prohibitions on renting and buying property in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz Laretz. The Gemara then introduces that even in, well, somewhere, but let's for a moment, let's assume Chutz Laretz, where it is permitted to sell property, it's still not permitted to sell three houses because it creates a shchuna, right? That's what we were talking about. Mm-hmm. Now, we divided the Rishonim basically into three camps, right? So the majority of Rishonim, we'll leave the Rambam out for a moment, believes that, as I just said, the prohibition under discussion is Chutz Laretz. But then you have the Rishonim basically divide amongst those who think that there needs to be no conceptual connection between this Mishnah and this halacha and the Mishnah and everything else in the Mishnah. It's just practically organized. Namely, since the Mishnah is talking about laws that relate to real estate in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laretz, so we list more halachot that relate to real estate in Chutz Laretz. And who took that position? Tosfos, Nebuke Yosef, Rabbeinu Yonah and Milunil, Rabbeinu Yonah. Right? They all said in various forms that why can't you sell three houses in Chutz Laretz? Because it caused danger. They had different variations. Danger, they'll start, you know, it'll cause violence, they'll start plotting, however exactly you think the emphasis is. But basically, it's a totally new Svara, which we haven't seen yet, that is just organized practically in this context. The Ritva, on the other hand, seems to, he agrees that it's only Chutz Laretz, but he seems to want to connect it conceptually. We saw two models of that. I suggested that maybe what he's saying is that if you set up a shchuna, so it's more like chanaya, and therefore it's ro'i to be gozer, like Eretz Yisrael or something like that. The footnote person in the Ritva, right, Goldstein suggests, I think Goldstein, Goldschmidt, something like that, suggests what? That there's an issue of Avodah Zarah, right? That even though we don't prohibit you from selling property to a guy in Chutz Laretz, because in the end of the day, the Avodah Zarah that's brought into his house is on his shoulders, that's only true if it's one. If you bring in if you sell to a bunch of people, so then, you know, you create an Avodah Zarah shtivel, and that's on you. Then we noted that the Rambam totally diverges from this analysis and says, no, this whole Mishnah must be discussing Eretz Yisrael, and the answer is even to rent to multiple goyim in Eretz Yisrael, which is a totally different understanding of the Mishnah. And then we noted there's also Machlokes Rishonim in terms of whether three means three at once, or even to sell the third, right? Meaning, is it that only if you create this community single-handedly it's problematic, or even if you are the Makom Patish, or the one who makes it that there is now a community? We noted that the Shach notes that it's only, or the Shach takes the majority position Rishonim that it's only in Chutz Laretz, and the Taz takes the reason of Tosfos and
that's
his camp.
Chutz Laretz or even
that's only right, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, it's not sort of selling even a single property.
Right.
Oh, okay. It's a Kavachomer, meaning
right.
This notion of three
is only in Chutz Laretz.
Correct, and therefore renting three is not a problem, right? Okay. So that's where we were. If you wanted to see a bit of a summary of it, so as I mentioned, I gave you two articles, sort of playing out some of the implications of this. One in Eretz Yisrael and one in Chutz Laretz. Right, that was what I gave you here. If you want to see where we're up to, right? Essentially, right. Which one do you want to do first? You want to do the English one? Well, it'll keep you awake for a minute.
Kind of like the Hebrew one.
You want to do the Hebrew?
Yeah, let's go for the Hebrew.
Okay, fine. So, the background to this question, right, you can look at the title, is Nachrim b'Medina Yehudit Autonomia O Pizur of Yisrael Rosen, right? Rav Yisrael Rosen was the head of, the founder of?
That's a good question.
Machon Tzomet.
Something, that thing.
Remember Tzomet? You guys went there a few weeks ago, the tour, the electric Shabbos people?
Yeah.
He made that. That was him.
Oh.
Okay?
Cool.
That was him. Okay. So he wrote an article trying to figure out whether the ideal halachic perspective is, if we're already assuming, which the first half of his article is to, part of it is to prove that the ideal Jewish state will include non-Jews. Right? That's his first point. Right? Which you know, some people think that that's not true. He's, you know, he notes that that is obviously true, right? The Torah never imagines a Jewish country that has no non-Jews. It has limitations in terms of what Avodah Zarah should be practiced and things like that, and what people might have to accept to be there, but you don't have to be Jewish to live in Israel. But then he says, okay, what is, you know, not, this may not be practical, and I may not, I'm not saying I agree with all of his conclusions, but he uses this sugya to try to understand it. His question is, okay, in an ideal halachic state, what would you rather? Would you rather that the Jews and the non-Jews live in totally different communities, or would you rather they be integrated, right? And similar in terms of power, right? Would you rather that, let's say, the Arabs have their own governments for themselves, or would you rather integrate them into our power, right? Like have them, right?
Probably better to have their own.
So he wants to know halachically, right? Not just saying politically, right? He wants to know, does Allah have anything to say in it? That's okay. So this is the middle of that article in Tumen Dalet. So first he writes, and this should summarize if you lost track of where we were in the sugya, this will summarize it, okay? Shel yasu shchuna gam bechutzlaretz, right? Is this prohibition of making community even in chutzlaretz? So as we saw, what's the answer to that question?
Yes.
According to Rav Rishonim, except for?
Rambam.
The Rambam. Good. So kan makom la'ir shenechakur rishonim b'haydina delo yaseh shchuna im davka ba'aretz o gam bechutzlaretz. So, the Rishonim debate whether this halach of not making a community is only in Eretz Yisrael or even Chutz Laretz. Ubari ki yisod ha-machloket kashur b'tama inyan shelo yasur shchuna. And now he pushes a little bit farther. He says, obviously, the answer to this question will depend on what you think the nature of this rule is.
Yeah.
The Rambam limits it to Eretz Yisrael, that you're allowed to rent them houses. Right? The Rambam's novelty is that this is about renting in Eretz Yisrael, that even though you're allowed to rent in Eretz Yisrael, you can rent to three at the same time. The Giborim made this diuk in the Rambam, even though you really need to be medayik, and it's pretty explicit in the Rambam, but okay. But Hosef, the Hachim Asher, we got in Perish Mishnayot, and as we already saw in the Perish Mishnayot, that seems to be what the Rambam says in both places. Tilin in Eretz Yisrael, Nemar Isser, Isser, Asiyat Shchuna, Shekein Isker, Rambam, Din Zeh, Le'inyan Haskara, Velo, Le'inyan Mechira. Because the Rambam introduces the prohibition for renting and not selling, V'zem Batim, Eretz Yisrael, Derak Maskirim, Lem Batim, Vilim Chotzer, Zgam Mochrin. And this makes sense in Chutz Laretz, and sorry, in Eretz Yisrael, because in Chutz Laretz you can even sell. Meidach haritva katav behedya bovad shel yaseh shchuna afil bechutz laretz ta'ash vehevei kviuta tuva vegazrinan. Right, but the Ritva says, you know, in certain terms, that this prohibition is even in Chutz Laretz. Good. Achein gam ledvarav shoresh ha'isuru mishum archakatam be'eretz Yisrael. This is more the way I understood it. Right? Lachain itir mechira l'nachrim b'chotzar davka l'yichidim asur l'kvutzor jimasu ken gam be'eretz Yisrael v'chamira tuva shekem kibutzam yachad be'eretz Yisrael mazik lanu v'chein gadev kasha b'ininu at sheyaz arshkunim b'bazhe gam b'chotz laretz. Right? So Rav Rosen seems to understand it the way I did, not the way the Rabbi Goldstein Schmidt footnote whatever says, which is that the reason the Ritva says in Chutz Laretz you can't set up three is because that's too community-like. It's too much like Eretz Yisrael. Right? You're setting up...
Meaning?
Right? Meaning it's a gzeiratu Eretz Yisrael. Meaning we don't want to give them a hold in Eretz Yisrael, and gzeiratu that we don't set up a firm hold or a big expensive hold in Chutz Laretz. He said, Achein Rishon Achim Kadud Yisrael Hum Mihuti Afil B'chutz Laretz V'lo Mishum Eretz Yisrael. But he said, others don't think that this is a gzeiratu Eretz Yisrael like the Ritva. Ella, but they thought it's a new reason, which is that it causes a sakana, right?
That's what we said.
That was Tosfot, not the Ritva.
Right,
that's what I said. Oh, this will summarize it to you in case you've lost where we are, right? Right, we shouldn't help create such dangerous situations. Yosef, shchuna ben mesur ben chutzar ze sharin and limkar batim lagoy bavashlim kol shol shagoyim nainu sham shchuna mishum dechashidah shvichas damim. The reason we don't want this because they could murder. And then yechein nifseg b'shulchan aruch yeradei kofnun alef loyimkar velo yaskir l'shlosha ovdei kachom biyachad b'shchuna yehudim. Right, the shulchan aruch says, don't sell, don't rent. Shach af bechutz laretz ubetaz u'shem yeres sakana al yedei kachas v'shalom. Okay. So let's skip down here. Diyun zeh. Haim isur shchuna amur gam bechutz laaretz kashur b'dikduk b'sugyat agmar b'avodizara Hashem. But he said, now this question of whether it's only in Eretz Israel or even in chutz laaretz depends on how you read our Gemara, right? Yes.
Yes.
How so? Right, our Mishnah discusses what's mutter and aser in Eretz Yisrael, Syria, and Chutz Laaretz. Ramer hechmir b'dargah achad yoter Rabbi Yosi. Meir is always one step more machmir than Rabbi Yosi. V'amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel loch Rabbi Yosi. So Amar Rabbi Yosi b'vashel yaseh shchuna. Yosef said, as long as you don't make a community. And the Gemara says, why aren't you worried that someone else will sell it to a non-Jew? Because we don't worry about that. Okay.
I don't understand really. What do you mean? What you just said now? I mean,
I just read the Gemara.
Yeah, I know, but I don't understand what the Gemara means. Elaborate?
You know how we feel sometimes, and you're like, oh, I know it so well.
No, this is
the Gemara, where the Mishnah had outlined Rabbi Meir Yossi's position on exactly what is Aser in Chutz Laaretz and Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Meir is always one step more machmir than Rabbi Yossi in all three cases, right? That was the beginning of the Mishnah. Then the Gemara introduces this notion of Shchuna, right? And the Gemara had said, you can't sell, but you are allowed to sell to another Jew. You don't have to worry that he's going to sell it in turn to
non-Jew.
Okay?
Okay.
The Dagol Meravava. Who's the Dagol Meravava? Rabbi Cheskel Landa. Who's Rabbi Cheskel Landa?
Son of a rabbi. Insert bigger rabbi here.
The Node of Yehuda.
Yeah.
He wants to be dayek that this is Eretz Yisrael. Shekein iser shkuna nemar gemar behem sheikh lepsak the halacha kerab yosi. But can he rehan yanem kshurim zebazet? Right, that it seems like, and this is new already, right? We haven't seen this yet. That how would you justify the Rambam? Because we said everyone else is obvious, right? Meaning, we already said you can't sell a single piece of property in Eretz Yisrael, so why would you have to tell me that you can't sell in
Eretz Yisrael?
Three, right? So therefore, the Rambam has to backtrack and say it must be about renting. But the Dagol Meravava says, how does the Rambam get this out of the Gemara? Because Shekein Isser Shchuna Nemar Gemara Da Behem Sheikh Lepsaka Alach Kerab Yosi Be Kanerah In Yanim Kshirim Zebazeh. Because this is a function of Rabbi Yosi's position. V'im Kaya Chutz Laaretz Hare Isser Shchuna Yeshayach Gam Lefi Reb Meir Shegam Lefiv Bechutz Laaretz Mochlem Batam Askirim Sados. But if this was for Rabbi Meir, so Rabbi Meir could have a prohibition in Chutz Laaretz. Achein, ikay rakal Eretz Yisrael, mkein asi shapir, derakal idur yosi, shalaviv v'Eretz Yisrael, maskirin batim v'lo sados, v'ilu l'Rabbi Meir, afilu batim, ein maskirin v'lo shayich shchuna. He said, this is the, right, so this is a bit complicated of an analysis, right, but he says, the Rambam's argument is that this asers renting to three people in Chutz Laaretz. He said, how does the Rambam know that? Because the Gemara presents this only as working in Rabbi Yosi. Why? Because, and not according to Rabbi Meir. The Gemara says, so the Dagol Meravava says, how? Why is that true? Because Rabbi Meir had said you can't even rent in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, if the Gemara thinks that the prohibition of Shchuna only works for Rabbi Yosi, it must be on an issue that wouldn't work for Rabbi Meir. Right? Meaning, you can only say that you can't rent to three people if you can rent to one. And therefore, the Dagol Meravava said, what the Rambam saw was he assumed that when the Gemara says this only works for Rabbi Yosi, what that tells you is it's on renting, which according to Rabbi Meir is zero. Right? According to Rabbi Yosi, one yes, three no. And then he skips down. The Shulchan Gedorim says that the reason this isn't true is because if we paskin like Reb Meir, so then obviously it has to be applying in Chutz Laaretz.
Whenever there's bull layout, right, and the knife is going to require legal.
Okay, but then if you want to look at the summary, skip down to Mikol Makom. Lefiani is Eishom and Shalosh Shitas Beishom B'Taima the Hagina the Laaser Shchuna. Aleph in Advarim Amur Beretzal Belvad Adin Kasher LaMamado Shal Nachri Beretzal Shral Uminiat Yeshivato HaOtonomid BeTochenu. So now he starts pushing it towards his independent, so his analysis in Eretz Yisrael. He said, okay, what is the upshot of all these Shitot for the question? Remember his question, which opened with, which was, what is the ideal way that non-Jews should live within?
That's true.
Right, so he says, according to the Rambam,
they can't.
According to the Rambam, what is this halacha telling you at its core?
That the Jews should be living together.
No, they should have their own
community. That non-Jews should not have their own community.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
right.
I was saying that.
Not Jews. No.
Jews should be living together, but no non-Jews should be in their community.
No, other way around. The non-Jews shouldn't have independent communities.
Yeah.
That's the opposite.
Well, no, that they have their own community, but it would be within the Jewish area. Correct?
No, that they should. No, it's the opposite. No.
So taking out the neighboring one also.
No. Right, he said, what is the Rambam telling you? By the Rambam telling you, you can't even rent to 3 non-Jews in our Torah. What is he telling you? That we'd rather have non-Jews integrated into our communities than segregated to create their own community, right? Shelo yaseh shchuna.
So like what the West Bank has right now is better than having a separate.
I mean, they're still individual.
No, but you understand, right? Meaning, right? This is why I said, right? If you think that the Rambam is right, what he points out is the Rambam seems to be saying that there is a preference. If we're once you establish you're allowed to have them in society. Right, there's a preference to, right, dafka integration in such a way that it doesn't create independent standing communities, right? Which is quite a striking conclusion.
Wait, so you could have more than 3 people in a Jewish community, or you can't.
Well, you have to, right? Meaning the way he's arguing. So, right, he's sort of.
If you say they can't have their own communities, but they should live amongst Jews, that kind of sounds like you could have more than 3 Jews in that community.
Or, I mean, the question is how far, right? How spread out are these 3, right? Presumably that's going to be the question he's going to answer.
Like if they're like 4 blocks away from each other.
Right, we'd have to figure out what he wants. But it's an interesting conclusion, right? Which is that ironically, right? Meaning if you think this is about Eretz Yisrael, right? This pushes for integration. Right, radical integration.
Yes.
Yeah, but in that way you keep things more peaceful as opposed to putting together.
The Rambam still holds that it could only be to 1 person. It can't.
No,
person.
What?
The Rambam said it's only you can't sell it to more than 1 person.
No. Remember, this is even renting, right? Meaning, he's saying if you're on renting, he says you can rent to 1 or 2, but not 3.
Right.
Right. In a single place.
Right.
Right. Which would mean that we prefer integration to. To the creation of Jewish and non-Jewish communities within Israel.
Right.
That's what Rosen is pointing out, is that the simplest understanding of Rambam, is that if you follow the Rambam to the logical conclusion, what he's saying is that in Eretz Israel, even when you have managed to bypass the problems of Lo Sechaneim, right?
Yeah.
Right? Meaning, you're renting and not selling. Right? I'm not saying with all the others, you're renting and not selling. Now, of course, right, so then he said, you would prefer, right, integration than, right, what he calls autonomy. Right? Integration to autonomy, which I'm not sure is the right one. It's integration rather than independent communities.
But how many people would be considered, like...
I don't know. Now, obviously, this is all depends on whether you think these prohibitions bechlal apply to Muslims, right? Which he doesn't know. Right? I mean,
that would
he just
be a whole different story about Bordeaux bechlal.
Correct.
You need
right?
To know the
meaning, right? What's interesting about Rosen is that he just jumps straight to, let's just assume that all non-Jews are included. What does this halakha tell us about whether we prefer it to be, right, prefer them to
Nobody
be...
Nobody really mentioned specifically whether it's Bordeaux bechlal or not.
No, but that was the background to all this discussion over and over and over and over again.
Like, but if they say it's like, if it's a dangerous non-Jew, like...
Correct, and we've been through this a million times, right? That in each time you have to ask. Interestingly, he doesn't do that. Bet, he says, L'shitana r'dvai ha'edin ha'mor gam mechutzor z'ach z'ira mishom achizat kevav r'tzirah b'derach shel hit arginut shchunatit. Right? And he said, he understands the r'dva the way I suggested, which is, that even in chutzlaretz, you don't actively initiate communities of non-Jews, Gzeirah to Eretz Yisrael.
You don't give three or you give the third?
Well, that we saw as a machlokes, but the point is, right, if you understand the Ritva the way River Zen is, the way I suggested, not the way the footnoter did, right, then the Ritva fundamentally agrees with the Rambam on this point, which is that the nature of the Isser is that we encourage integration rather than independent communities being created. Right, as opposed to, but wait one second. But according to the Tosvos, right, it's going to be the opposite.
Because he's worried.
Right, you understand what it's Yotzi from this? That according to the Rambam and the Ritva, what's the problem? The way he's understanding it is the very creation of an independent non-Jewish community.
Right, but according to the Tosvos,
it's the opposite. It's danger. So we'd rather we have no problem with them having independent communities. Right, meaning what is it represent pointing at? Is that one way of looking at the Machlokas, Rambam and even Ritva against Tosvos in a way that we haven't yet is. Is the problem about the creation of a non-Jewish community per se, or is it the creation of a non-Jewish community among the Jewish community, right? He says, if it's about danger, then where's the problem? Only among Jews. They could have 10 million people for all I care as long as we're not there. But if the problem is about giving them a hold in the land,
then
it's dafka. They have more of a hold in the land
when they live in the
no, when they have their own community, right? That's the irony of this thing, right? But he's saying fundamentally, the real question is the problem a creation of a non-Jewish community, nikuda, or of a non-Jewish community amongst Jews? Now, the Ritva thing is borderline, because you could say, right, let me just point out, that I'm not convinced of his analysis of the Ritva. Because you could have said that what does the Ritva say? You aren't allowed to sell to three people, to three non-Jews in Chutz La'aretz because it looks too much like Kviut, and it looks like Kviut Eretz Yisrael. But it might be that when does it look like, in what sense is it close to Kviut Eretz Yisrael such that you have to make a gzera? Maybe only in a Jewish community. Right, meaning, right? I'm not sure he's right about the Ritva. I understand what he's saying about the Rambam versus Tosfos. Right, but the Ritva, you could say, look, if I sell three houses in the middle of Wyoming, right, to non-Jews, that doesn't look in any way, shape, or form like anything which is worth making a zera for Eretz Yisrael. But if I sell three houses in the Borough Park, right, which has Kedushas HaMakom, right?
I have a question for the Rambam. The Rambam says that the Rambam doesn't seem like he has... there's two ways the Rambam could go. You could say he cares about danger, and he's saying only people that you know can move into the community, or he doesn't care about danger whatsoever.
He doesn't bring up danger.
Like, he doesn't care about whatsoever. So you could allow, someone who's dangerous to move in.
Yeah. And maybe there'll be different problems. Now,
right.
In the end of the day, though, even though this is what I think you should have said, Rebrozen wants to push back, because he says, well, maybe this isn't right. Right? Meaning one way of looking at this, let's leave the Ritva out of it for a moment, is the Rambam versus Tosfos. Namely, that the Rambam thinks the problem is the creation of a non-Jewish community autonomously. And according to Tosfos, it's
the creation because of
within a Jewish community. But he says, no, maybe even Tosfos wouldn't allow you to sell to three non-Jews in Wyoming. Right? Because maybe it's the very, he says, the very hitkansut, right, the very collection of the non-Jews together in a concentration that creates the problem. Again, specific type of non-Jews maybe, but I'm not sure that's right. I think Tosfos really thinks it's amongst the Jews. That's really
because then there's no problem with danger. Like,
correct. Correct. So now he moves back to the Rambam,
Who said that point?
Reverse end.
There's no problem to be amongst Jews?
So I would have thought it's only a problem, according to Tosfos, it's only amongst Jews. Mm-hmm. Right? He thinks maybe even according to Tosfos it's anywhere, but I don't think that's right.
Anywhere what? That there would be a problem?
Very concentration of the non-Jews in the community that creates the danger. I don't think that's right. Tosfos is saying within the Jewish community.
Yeah.
According to Tosfos, it might be very fine and dandy to sell to non-Jews property in the middle of nowhere.
Mm. But,
okay. But he argues that maybe not. Maybe that is considered creating a danger. I don't really buy it. Okay. But now he tries to play out his understanding of Rambam. Again, his understanding of Rambam, which again I think is the minority position Rishonim, right? I think the majority position Rishonim is just like Tosfos. This is a technicality of danger. Right? and therefore it's Eretz Yisrael Chutz La'aretz, presumably only amongst Jews. And according to Tosfos, Dafka, if I had to guess, I would say
it's only amongst Jews.
It's only amongst Jews, and therefore the way that Israel looks nowadays with separate communities to avoid tension, according to Tosfos, is ideal.
Yeah.
Right? But I mean, if you ask me, according to Tosfos, this has nothing to do with the issue of Eretz Yisrael. This has everything to do with safety.
Well, we already got past the part of community.
And assuming we've gone past the issue of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, the only problem is danger. So if there's going to be animosity, right, we know that there's going to be tension, right? As much as we try to play down tension and diminish tension, there's going to be some tension, at least the moment. You know, Yavo Yo will have peace, but in the meantime, right? But in the meantime, it's probably better for everybody if we have a little bit of distance, right? Again, we daven every day that there will be peace and that this will not always be the case, that we won't have to worry about this. But at the moment, right, this is the reality. But then Rav Rosen says, okay, well, let me play out what it would look like for Rambam. Now, again, I'm saying it, I don't know how many times I can say this, I'm not convinced that, I don't think we paskin like the Rambam, which is against all the other Rishonim, and I'm not convinced of this application. Plus all the other qualifications of which non-Jews, but Rav Rosen wants to play out what this would look like if you play this out as a suggestion for how modern Israel should look. Okay? Again, I'm not endorsing it, but I want to show you how he does this. So look at Amchai Yeshev. You got it? The next section in Rav Rosen?
Yep.
Yesh ladun memekor ha'isur b'yisir da'asiyat shchuna l'nochrem b'eretz Yisrael. We have to look for the source of this prohibition. So Bishlam will be shown him Shaosrim Gambachotzar Mechshasha Kana Re Tamam Vini Mukamimam. If you think this is just about danger, look inside. If you don't complain to me that you don't understand translation. Come on.
He said,
if you think that it's about danger, so it's about danger, right? You don't need a source. Re Tamam Vini Mukamumam. The source and reason is there. Achla Rambam Mokosher. That should be Kedusha Aretz Mina Lahem Ha. But according to the Rambam, that it's about Kedusha Aretz. So what exactly is the? Where does the Rambam get this? So he says, "Vine Inyan Ze Kashur B'Meisharin LeDrasha Sifrei B'Parsha Teitzei." So he suggests that it emerges from a series of drashot in the Sifrei, like this. Ala pasuk M'chay Yeshev B'Kir B'Cha B'Makom Asher Yivchar B'Achad Sharecha B'Tov Lo Lo Tonen. He shall dwell with you in the place where I choose, in one of your gates. When it's good for him, don't oppress him. V'dorash ha-sifrei sham, mimenu yateinu, mimenu pina, la'alichoteinu, imnachrim bar'tzeinu. So this sifrei outlines the way that we relate to non-Jews in Israel. Imcha yeshev, v'lo bi'eretzma. With you, but not in the heart of the city. Birkir b'cha, v'lo b'svar. Among you, but not on the borders. Where he has parnasa, in one of your gates that he shouldn't be traveling around. So the Sifrei apparently thought that this the ideal place is not Yerushalayim. Again, I don't know whether we paskin this way, but okay. Bitov lo minaveh aral naveh yafeh. Right, even if he moves to a good house, lo tonenu zuno dvarim. Right, don't insult him. So la'alan nidon b'pertei alachot v'alichot halim kad midrash zeh. He said, okay, what is the meaning of this first drasha? That they can live with you, but not in the heart of the city. So, there's two ways of understanding this. Aleph, one is to say they have to live on the periphery of society, and not in the cities. But not in the main cities, right? You have to put them in the exurbia. Right? Exurbia is like more than suburbia, right?
Exurbia is more than suburbia?
Like farther out than suburbia, right? Bet. He said, alternatively, what it means is, don't let them have their own cities. And he said, the Ravid says one of the mitzvah of the Gertoshav is he can live in Israel but not in the city. Balek Shaita. Shitat arrived at Eifo, Shadin Zeshalajiv, Zachan, Novem, Kedush to Arez, Venoheg, Bizman, Zeshain, Yobel, Noheg. The Rivet thinks that this is about Kedush to Arez, which is lessened nowadays. And Amagin Mishnah Shem Kotev, Shaini Rekim, Medivir Rabbeinu, Bergir Melchor Akum, Shemutar Leshev, Beiratzma, Kishaina, Yobel, Noheg, Messiah Vigam, Loraiti, Medivir Rabbeinu, Maskav, Shem, Mashim, and Tobedoch, Eiratzma, Bizman, Yobel. So the Ramam doesn't say this. The Chorah Dvarv, so Trim Zedzed, the Batach, Bahashal, Ramam, Moser, Gam, Chaina, Yobel, Noheg. So on the one hand, the Rambam does think this prohibition applies even nowadays. V'siyem de lo matza shasara afil k'shobel noheg u'makam anadol l'psak ha-Rambam b'perek yud me'akum. So the achena dvarim pshutim u'burim kavanato l'tzayin ha-din b'perek yud me'elchus akum alach gimel sh'maskirim batim l'nachrim b'eretz rabu v'ashal yasa shkuna v'zenoveh k'nirem yidreshet ha-sifrei b'lo b'eretz ma. So he says what I think the Rambam is doing, or the Magen Mishnah is doing, according to the Rambam, is saying that the Rambam derives the Yisr from lo bi'ir atzma, v'haynu, shlo yaduru bi'ir atzma'it, that they shouldn't have their own community, gofen ha'sheni anal, v'adina kaim lo'olam, gam k'shena yovel noheg, and this is true forever, even without the yovel. And then he writes, so just look at the last paragraph. Now skip down. Lafi darkenu lamadnu ki l'shita d'ramam ein mafshirim l'nachrim gam yemenu l'tashiv barim v'chazor atzmayim el b'tochenu v'enenu v'zeh makor l'din shlo yaseh shchuna. And he said, therefore, he thinks even nowadays halacha l'maisa, what he would paskin is that they can't live in independent cities. Advarim amurim b'artzrov v'ladarot v'lavdavkim v'nekedush sha'aretz el mitamei b'tachon. He said, the reason is for security. Kol adarganut ironit atzmayit sofa shetatzmeich atzmut n'achrit al admat Yisrael. Because independent cities create independent
states,
right? Independent states, states within a state, right? And that's what he is worried about. Mm-hmm. Now, and here he conflates a little bit Tosfos and the Rambam. So again, I don't know if I agree with it, but I think it's an interesting, right, attempt at analysis to say, again, right, I would have said that I like his first attempt, right? It may be the difference between whether it's a bigger problem to have them like within the Jewish community or not, depends on bitachon or not. Right, because if you think that they're going to cause damage, that's only a problem if they're amongst Jews, right? If you think it's a problem of creating independence, right, giving them a hold in the land, then Dafka, it should be more problematic when they're independent rather than integrated, right? In the end, he doesn't like this because he thinks that, right, even Tosfos can be understood to be anywhere, right, that any independent entity creates security problems. But whether or not he's right about Tosfos, he argues that for the Rambam, look, I think what's clear is that you can't deny that according to the Rambam, what is it saying here is that there's a unique issue in Eretz Yisrael of creating states within states, right? And therefore, he pushes for integration. Now, if you remember in Los Echanim, we saw that the majority of Poskim thought that you could permit a Jew even selling land in Eretz Yisrael if what? If the alternative was that he would end up living amongst Arabs, which might be dangerous for him. The reason I think most Poskim say that is because majority of Poskim follow who in this sugya? Tosfos.
Wait, can you... Sorry,
if you remember in Los Echanim, remember? Right, according to the Rambam, right, what he's saying is that the problem here isn't danger per se, it's the creation of independent non-Jewish substates.
Right?
But if you remember, the majority of Poskim thought that even if there's a problem in Los Echanim, if a person doesn't sell his property, he'll end up being forced to be the only Jew amongst Arabs. So the Poskim argue that it was mutter for him to sell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right?
That would be like Tosfos because it's
different. Correct, right? If you read Rav Asher Weiss's Tshuva, it's clear, and I think this is obvious, that even if Rav Rosen is right within the Rambam, the majority position that we showed him, as we saw, is this whole issue is about danger, right? And therefore, right, it's the opposite of Rav Rosen, right? It's more, right, Dafka, we can allow them to create their own communities, right? Okay. The problem is allowing sort of, right, potentially dangerous integrated communities.
But
right?
It will happen without you, whether you really like it or not.
Right, well, meaning...
Here in Israel, we kind of have both. We have
correct. Now, Right, the question of how you actually apply this nowadays is really interesting, because right, we have both. We have some independent, and we have some integrated, right? And each of them have their benefits, and each of them have their downsides.
Right.
Right? Again, ideally, we'd have peace, and they'd all be fine, right?
Even the integration cities, like, they're still kind of split. Like, there is...
Correct! Right, and, you know, and of course, you do also have to wonder, which I haven't seen anyone deal with, which is, what defines a community? Right, meaning... In the time of Chazal, how big were these communities, right? You might be talking a block. Right here, what does that mean? You can't sell to three, right? Like, even if you want to apply the prohibition, what does that mean? You can't sell to three non-Jews
in... houses.
Right? Like, in a city of 12 million? Like, right? Like, what exactly are we talking about? Right? I haven't seen anyone quite deal with that.
Sell... Well, it depends according to who. Like.
Okay. Now, what I gave you in 11 was a summary of a position by the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Rav Moshe Feinstein. Moving now from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laaretz, which was...
Feinstein,
or who cares? Honestly, why? You guys spend too much time arguing about Narishkeit and not actually focusing on the Karos.
Thank you, Rebbe.
Chutz Laaretz, right? This was the question the Lubavitcher Rebbe was posed, was... Is there a halachic reason to push back? Right? He said that the reality is, I'll summarize and then we can read through it quickly because it's English. I hope you can read English. Right?
I saw the two big words.
Which don't worry, I'm going to hold you responsible for in just a minute. You can explain it to the whole group. Right? Was, okay, moving from Rachel to Chutz Laaretz, we saw the majority position is true even in Chutz Laaretz. So, whatever exactly it means, and again, I'm willing to say that maybe Bizman HaZeh, if you have 12 million people in a city, right, selling to three non-Jews anywhere in New York... right, is Bechal not a problem? Right, let's say that's true. But Lubavitcher Rebbe said what seems to emerge from this, right, is, and this was a problem, right, definitely, you know, this was a problem, and certain Jewish communities died out because, you know, other people moved in some cases they became crime-ridden areas, and the Jewish community, which used to be thriving, had to move to the next community, right? Move over. Now this creates all types of problems. Why? So first of all, just practically, it creates a problem because all the Jews who are still there until it totally moves over are potentially in danger, right? Even if it's not dangerous, right? Even the people moving in are totally upstanding citizens. There's another problem, which is. It forces the Jewish community to spend a fortune of money to build a new shul.
Right.
Right? Meaning every time a community moves, the infrastructure has to move with them. Right?
And they can't just...
And then you see this around America all the time, right? These massive shuls that can, you know, house 2,000 people, and they have like 8 people on Shabbos, they struggle to get a minyan, because the Jewish... Right? Because the Jewish community relocated, what, 6 blocks? Right? And they had to build a new shul? Right? What?
6 blocks or
something. Well, sometimes that's all it is. Right, we have, you know, in Toronto, there's like this. It's like these big shuls, sometimes, like, it's a 10-minute walk from where the community is now. But obviously, you need a new shul.
Nobody wants to walk 10 minutes.
So Lubavitcher Rebbe wrote a piece arguing that, look, Halach actually has something to say about whether we should encourage people to allow. Right, because how does this happen, right? It happens because, realistically, right? This happens because you have the Jewish community. Jews all want to live within, especially Orthodox Jews, all want to live within walking distance of the shul, right? Which drives prices up. Then you have a bunch of young people who can't afford to live in the heart of the Jewish community. So what do? They buy 15.
Everywhere is like
correct.
That.
They buy 15 minutes, 20 minutes from the heart of the community, right? For a while, that means the community is now expanded. It used to be a mile, now it's 2 miles. But what happens? 30 years later, all the people who used to be the young marrieds in the first community
they got older.
Are now, you know, snowbirds who spend 6 months a year in Florida, and their minion, right, is empty. And the community on the... Nothing if you live in Florida. If you live in New York and your shul is in Florida half the year, it's a problem.
I could give the
right?
same example. By us is also like that.
Correct.
It used to be only Jews, and now there's more like older people and youngsters who are coming to the Jewish
correct. Community. And then what happens? But what happens? So you have these huge communities where the old community used to be, and nobody's in those shuls, right? And now the young people who are 20 minutes away, they have little kids. They don't want to walk to the big shul, right? Maybe they started there. Right? Meaning, what do? First they move to the periphery. They walk the extra 10 minutes to shul. To get a cheaper house. But once 50 people have done that, they don't need to walk 20 minutes, they just open a shul in a basement. And once they get funds together, they build another shul. right? And then Choser Chalila, right? And this goes on forever, right? In Toronto, I'm telling you, in Toronto, it's
like the cycle, Rabbi.
We had one show, everyone was based around that.
I'm telling you, in Toronto, it's crazy. Right, Toronto, it's I've never seen anything like it in my life, right? Because the Jewish community all runs on the same street on Bathurst. I've said this before. Bathurst goes for like 85 miles or something,
wow.
Right? It just keeps going. The Jews, when they came to Toronto in like the 1870s, I don't know, something like that, all moved downtown by the river. And then they moved up. Eventually, there's no community downtown, so they moved to, like, you know, a few miles from downtown, and they moved north, and they just keep moving north up this forever.
You know the shuls on Bathurst?
What?
You know all the shuls on Bathurst?
Do any shuls? Yes, I know all the shuls. All, like, 60 shuls on Bathurst.
Wow, that's good.
100 shuls on Bathurst. I don't know.
Oh, it's 85 miles long.
Dude, it just goes on. Like, they all, the entire Jewish community in Toronto lives along Bathurst somewhere between Dufferin and Yonge. Whatever.
Wow.
Right, basically, like, everything is a grid. So they live all off Bathurst, right, within a few minutes of Bathurst, just forever. But you see that the community, I mean, like, Ura's family is many, many generations Toronto. So, like, her grandfather grew up downtown, then moved up to Clanton Park area, which is, like, whatever, 5 kilometers, let's say, from downtown. And when we were living there, we were living in Thornhill, which is another 5 kilometers, right? Meaning, right, literally, this is how Toronto works, right? You move up, right? But that means that each time you do this, you have to build a new shul, a new school, right? It costs a lot of money, right? So the Lubavitcher Rebbe was dealing with the question, sometimes it could be that the community is given over to, as happened a lot in New York, right? Certain areas like Canarsie, right, was infamous for this. It's like Far Rockaway area, right? Became not just like non-Jewish; they became right crime-ridden areas, right? Right, certain parts of the Bronx were like this also, right? And then there are places where it's just a financial issue, right? Where by moving the community, you cause undue financial strain in the community because now you have these massive shuls you have nothing to do with, and you got to build another one, right? 20 minutes away when right? You know, you think about the balance, right? What's he saying, right? If you had stayed, if you'd paid another $50,000 for your, you know, for your house, then the shul, right? Then the community could have saved $5 million on a new shul,
yes.
Right? So it's a trade-off, right? Is there any, right? So Rabbi Bleich summarizes this issue, which I think is just an interesting thing to think about, right? Where the Lubavitcher Rebbe thought that our sugya weighs in on that question. And Rav Moshe Feinstein agreed on this. And he said, the observation that conditions of life on the American continent are markedly different from those encountered in European countries in days gone by is a commonplace truism. One aspect of the American scene, which is of the utmost significance in terms of Jewish communal life, is the phenomenon of changing neighborhoods. In previous habitations, Jews tended, whether by necessity or by choice, to form their own ethnic... Okay, you know what? My throat is getting dry, and this is English. So someone else, take over.
I'll do it.
What?
Maybe I'll do it.
I'm ready to do this twice already.
Can I?
Read it twice.
Go through it quickly.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Quickly.
Okay. Our own ethnic enclaves and to establish themselves in a residential area.
And also I have to translate the English for some people, so you know.
Okay. Yeah. Which retained... Wait a second. Their Jewish identity over a period of centuries. The permanence and stability of these Jewish sectors permitted the erection of a population,
synagogues,
the development of networks of schools, and the founding of a communal institutions, with the surety that population shifts would not render them obsolete. Jews residing in such areas could not but acquire a strong sense of belonging, which in turn naturally fostered a strong sense of communal responsibility. Life in such surroundings had a distinctive Jewish flavor. The very air became
permeated
with a Yiddishkeit. All of this was inestimable value in terms of fostering a feeling of Jewish identity and solidarity and transmitting these emotions to subsequent generations.
I'm just going to point out that it's funny that, like, I said someone else read in English, it's fine, and the person who ends up reading it is the one who English is not their first language. So it's not like it's super easy for you. I mean, relatively easy because your English is very good, but, like,
thank you.
You know. Still, ironic. Okay, I don't care. It's fine.
At least a portion of responsibility for a mazel
for the malaise.
Malaise of America.
What does malaise mean?
Right when you glorify him.
My dear Americans, and Shimon, the answer to the question is why am I reading for the English? Is because it's an opportunity to teach grammar and to teach vocabulary rather. Malaise. What does malaise mean?
Malice?
No, that's malaise. Okay. It's not malice. Malice is M-A-L-I-C-E.
Right, I don't know malaise. If it's a play on it. Malaise,
for that? Wait, would you like to look it up? Look it up. Here, we'll teach you English. This is the benefit of looking through it. Yes, this is well-written English. You'll remember it better. This is the answer, Sherman. You don't have to stay if you don't want to. But I'm reading through it.
General feeling of discomfort, illness, or uneasiness. The exact cause is difficult to identify.
Exactly. Right? Malaise is like, something's wrong, but I'm not really sure what. Right?
Okay, so it says, malaise of American Jewish life may be attributed to the uniquely American phenomenon of population shifts and changing neighborhoods. Synagogues, schools, and communal institutions must be relocated or rebuilt at phenomenal costs in terms of both finance and human energy. Feelings of transience and anonymity, born of this unprecedented degree of the
Everyone's looking at this sentence. Okay, let's do every word in this. Okay, feelings of transience. What's transience? Temporariness. Right. Anonymity.
Anonymous.
Right. That you don't have a name. Born of this unprecedented degree of domiciliary mobility. What is that?
Domiciliary. I know. It means to be
a domicile is a home. So domiciliary mobility just means that people move homes.
Yeah.
Not mobile homes. They're moving homes. They're not talking about trailer parks. Yeah. Right? Contribute to a general shirking of communal responsibility. Right? He says, right, it's not just... Right? He said part of it is that it means that people don't feel responsible to these institutions because... Right? So let the shul die, right? We'll start our own temporary shul, right? And we don't have to invest a lot into it because it'll only last for 20 years and then we'll move on, right? The lack of Jewish atmosphere causes feelings of Jewish identity to become dull and commitment to Paul. Right? So he says, right? For decades, rabbinic authorities, in company with lay leaders of the Jewish community, simply wrung their hands in grief and bemoaned what appeared to be an irreversible sociological trend. However, several years ago, a significant attempt was made to halt migration from Jewish neighborhoods by showing that such action is not contraindicated solely by social desiderata, but frequently entails violation of halachic precedents as well. It's a really hard word to actually pronounce. Contraindicated, what's contraindicated?
I guess in the contrast of being indicated.
Yes, indicated to the contrary, right? But I mean, it's not just social norms, that's the point. That it might actually be halacha, right? In a noteworthy article on this topic appearing in the ER 5728 issue of Hapardes from Menachem Mendel Schneerson, Lubavitcher Rebbe, points out that the sale of a dwelling within a Jewish community is subject to rigid halachic limitations. Right?
What is Deserata?
What is like norms, right? Like it's not just social rules, it's not just like what we do, right? It's actually halachic rules, right? Not only social rules.
Got it.
Okay, who wants to take over?
I'll do this. I'm the one who says for it. The Choshen Mishpat 156-1 stipulates that if an objection is entered by any of the residents, householders sharing a common courtyard may not rent a dwelling to a physician, bloodletter, weaver, notary, or teacher of secular subjects, since the practice of these professions would increase traffic in the courtyard. Objections to such rental are legitimate. Rama adds that sale of dwelling in contradistinction to rental to Jewish members of these professional is permitted, as explained by Sma, a
Sefer Mirot Anayim.
A standard commentary on Choshen Mishpat, rental is presumed to be for personal domicile, and therefore is forbidden to members of the aforementioned professions. Purchase, however, may be motivated by other purposes,
such as subsequent lease to a tenant not practicing these professions or personal use at a later date following retirement from these offending pursuits. In any event, activity counter to the interests of other residents can be curtailed by the Beis Din if the purchaser is a Jew subject to a halachic jurisdiction. A non-Jew engaged in one of these professions is not similarly bound. Hence, sale of such property to members of these professions who are not subject to Jewish law can be prevented by neighborhood residents, since it is possible that their interests will be jeopardized. Citing these sources, Rabbi Schneerson reasons that property owners may, in accordance with halacha, prevent the sale of property if such sale would depress property values or result in the lowering of existing housing standards.
Right, so the first thing the Lach Rebbe knows, it's not only our sugya that weighs in. Right, there are many different sugyas that say that when you, what you do in your house, right, with your property, you are actually, right, it's not, you can't do whatever you want, right? If what you are going to do is going to affect other people, right? It might be a problem. So the first point he says, right, this is not our sugya, but it's another sugya that points in the same direction. He's saying, right, as we said, part of what drives housing prices up in Jewish communities is that everyone wants to live there. If you start to sell out, right, and the Jewish community expands, right, for miles and miles,
but Dafka,
right, the price goes down in the heart of the Jewish community.
But Dafka, that's when more Jewish people should buy. One is becoming a problem. No?
But that's not how things, right? Because what happens is it'll be like $1 million for a house in the heart of the Jewish community, you know, 500,000 outside, and if you start, you know, when a lot of people start selling, it'll go down to 800. It'll still be cheaper to buy outside, right? It's happening in my parents' community now, right? The prices shot up for a while because like 200 Hasidic families moved in and started buying up houses, but now they're spreading out, right, for miles, and now the what used to be the heart of the firm community is not necessarily the heart anymore, so prices are starting to reach an equilibrium, right? That's just the way things work.
Right.
Right? Okay. Yosef, why don't you read the next paragraph?
Indeed, halacha imposes restrictions upon the sale or lease of property to non-Jews. Fearful that persons not bound by the dictates of Jewish law will use the property for purposes not sanctioned by such law. Halacha demands that the original owners assume liability for any resultant damages. Halacha Mishpat 175-40 states on the basis of Baba Kama 114a that the original owner is subject to excommunication unless he assumes responsibility for any loss incurred or unless the Gentile purchaser or tenants agree that all disputes arise from the use of such property be adjudicated in accordance with with Jewish law. Although Shulchan Aruch cites an opinion of Rosh to the effect that these restrictions are relaxed and in instances where no Jewish purchaser or tenant is willing to offer an equivalent sum, real estate owners are nevertheless forbidden to engage in profiteering. Property owner is expressly enjoined from accepting a sum significantly higher than the fair market value of the property when such an offer is
malevolently tendered. Malevolently. The opposite of benevolent is malevolent.
Malevolently.
Right, meaning viciously.
Tendered for the specific purpose of destroying the Jewish character of the neighborhood.
Okay, and then he says something shocking, right? Taking into consideration the fact that the lives and safety of the remaining Jewish residents are often endangered as a result of the neighborhood deterioration, right? Schneerson even goes as far as to argue that there may be grounds for demanding that neighborhood emigres return to their previous homes, right? This is taking it to its next stream. Not only can't you sell, but if you did, you got to buy it back and move back into the community, right? That's how much he's convinced by this. Jewish law requires an individual to do everything in his power to prevent or remove any source of potential communal harm. Rama, in Chosh Mishpat, cites an intriguing ruling of Agon Mordechai regarding the case of a certain feudal lord who desired to move Jews living in scattered villages throughout the countryside to an area within his suzerainty. Right? His suzerain is like his feudal area. In order to secure compliance with his wishes, he sought to enlist the judicial aid of the larger community already within his jurisdiction and threatened the Kehillah with expulsion from his domain were they not to cooperate. The ruling issued in this particular case was that in light of the grave communal threat, Jews residing in far-flung settlements were indeed obligated to alleviate the danger of their to their co-religionists by changing their places of residence. In some circumstances, the people compelled to relocate would be entitled to claim financial compensation. Following this line of reasoning, Schneerson argues that nowadays Jews may perhaps be obliged to return to their former abodes in order to prevent deterioration of a neighborhood if continued deterioration would effectively result in the expulsion of remaining residents. Regardless of the applicability of this particular parallel, the considerations advanced by Schneerson underscore the gravity of the problem. Moshe Feinstein, in the letter published in Sivan 5728, issued the same journal, indicates general agreement with Rabbi Schneerson's views, and add that had the latter's article not appeared, he would have himself authored a similar response. Without doubt, the Jewish community has a vested interest in areas where it has built religious centers and educational institutions at a high expenditure of communal funds and a priceless investment of human effort. These halachic opinions serve to re-emphasize the importance of neighborhood preservation. Of course, when actual physical danger to residents is involved, the situation is totally different, and other considerations become paramount. Therefore, pragmatically speaking, it may not be feasible to legislate with regard to moribund neighborhoods. However, before the fabric of existing Jewish neighborhoods becomes so hopelessly unraveled, we would be wise to take the proverbial stitch in time and exercise imagination and foresight in communal planning. So Rabbi Bleich says that basically this halacha and many other related halacha tell you that this isn't just a halacha, right? It tells you that halacha takes into account communal planning and wants you to understand the costs of moving and allowing right communal displacement and the like. And again, whatever exactly you think the parameters of this halacha are or are not, right, keeping right taking into the fuller picture is important.
But to hold the preservation, in other words,
right? Meaning he's saying these halakha point in that direction.
So he would say what the Tosfos was saying, that it's not. I mean, it's not for the danger, but it's they should have.
Well, right. So he ironically says, right. Obviously, if it's dangerous, he said you could get out.
Right.
Okay.
They
I give you
have their own community.
Correct. Okay. I give you one more tshuva. We're not going to read through this extensively. I want to. We'll finish. We're not going to do this topic again tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll do kibush yachid, which will take us quite a few days probably. It's a hard sugya. But the Ateret Paz weighed in on this. Let me just run through some of his points. He said, first of all, as he argues, that remember we said, is the issue selling three houses or the third? So remember I said it's probably Misvara, which should it be? The third, right? Because he said the whole point is that when there's a concentration of the non-Jews in the area, that creates the problem. So he says if that's the case, it's the third house, not three, right? Meaning if you bring it up to the threshold, it should be a problem. That's his first point. right, and therefore he was asked about an apartment building. He said if two have already been sold, then you can sell three. But then he adds that the flip is also true, and this is something we haven't seen, which is, right now this is realistically going to be the case in Chutz La'aretz almost all the time, which is, right, if you argue, right, he said, what's the nafkamina? If you think that the issur is selling to the third person and not three, that's l'chumra. But what's the kula that comes out of that?
Selling three altogether.
No. Is that if three people already live there, there's no issur. Right, he says practically, right, he said, what is this halacha, right? And this is what he adds, but I think is very important, because no one else says it, which is, this halacha formally, right? I mean, what Rabbi Bleich is saying, based on the law of Tereba, is that, hashkafically speaking, or maybe halachically speaking, right, you have to take into account the implications on the community. But the formal halacha of creating a shkunat akum is only if there were only two before, and you now create the third, right? But what happens if there were 1,000 before and you're selling the 1,001st?
You sell in 1,000.
There already were 1,000 non-Jews living here, and you sell the 1,001st house. What's the problem? Nothing. Because not going to change a darn thing, right? And he says, therefore, right, idiotia kulun nechumra. If you think that the issur is to sell three, that means you can't independently create a community. But if you think the issur is to sell the third, right, that's because you can't create a community. But if a community is already there, it doesn't matter anymore. And therefore, halacha l'maisa, he's saying, in most cases, definitely in Chutz La'aretz, there's never a limitation on selling to them, because what's going to happen? right? What, even in the most from communities, right? How often do you have a place where the community doesn't have three non-Jews in the whole community, yeah, right?
Isn't there a yeshuv where they decide altogether that...
I said in Chutz Laretz. In Eretz Yisrael, you could actually have this, okay, right? But in Chutz Laretz, realistically, what city do you have, right? You know?
Yeah, even no. Where I live, in the end, I said...
In Achinami, where I live, that's true, right? In Efrat, in Achinami, yeah, right? There are, to the best of my knowledge, 0% of the city, who owns is not Jewish. Right, not because I think it's because it's not because it's illegal. Like it is in certain yeshuvim, you have to pass a test, right, to get into this. Right, like you know, you actually you need a hashkafic test and a whatever test. Right, in certain places, they for a while they had like IQ tests, right, which was you know only smart people could live there. Right, yeshuvim can do all types of interesting things. Efrat is not true, but still, realistically, who wants to live in Efrat if they're not you know?
But don't you?
It's like it's not just like Jews. It's like 90+% of the same hashkafa, right? It's like all dati lumi of variations, right? And like, fine. But that means that realistically, he says that in most places, once there is already three non-Jews, right, this iser doesn't apply, right? And he says furthermore, he says realistically, not only that, if you live in a building which is mostly secular anyways, right, and the community is changing and they're all going to sell to the Arabs and just move into another community, so there's no iser because right, no one's going to stop them, right? Meaning he's willing to say not only is it mutter once there's already a community present, even if it's basically inevitable, right? Meaning everybody's selling out and only a few people are from and are going to listen to halacha, so then there's no problem because you, it's not you, it's just... Right, it's just happening. There's nothing you can do about it. Yeah.
Let me say, would you say like you have all, like one building, like our building back? I mean, Belgium is like all Jewish. And let me say you want to bring
it. So that might be where it might be a problem.
You think it would be a problem?
Right, that might be where it'd be a problem in a Hanami. Okay, then he gets into a little bit of question, which I don't want to, but I'll just throw it out there. Big adol, which is, that whether the fact that non-religious Jews are going to sell it anyways to the non-Jews, whether that makes a nafka, I mean, it depends on certain things within Lifnei Iver, on whether you're allowed to count on the fact that someone's going to do it anyways. Okay.
It's a non-Jewish owned apartment, but all Jews live there. Are you allowed to give it up on the chance that a non-Jew might move in? Like,
giving up, I feel like you could do, right? There's nothing you can do about it.
I'm special upset against my left hand.
Fine. And then he notes, yeah. I mean, but in general, right? He thinks that in this case it's a little bit different because again, if the issue is damage, right? Then it's not really right. This is not a formal question, right? Like, can I count on the fact that someone else is going to sell the property to these right to the non-Jews or whatever? He said, realistically, this is a practical halacha, right? If we pass like tells us about damage and about danger, if you know that this apartment buildings to be sold out, then you can sell out, right? Because you don't have to wait. What's his argument? You don't have to wait, right? If, like, you live in an apartment building of 10 apartments, right? And you see where the neighborhood's going, right? You see that they're selling out, right? You don't have to wait for someone else to sell to the non-Jews and the prices to start going down, right? Because it's no longer the hub of the Jewish community, so you lose out on the real estate deal, right? You don't have to wait for that, right? Like, once you see the writing on the wall, he says, look, the damage is done, right? You're not doing it. Which I think is a fair analysis. Okay, fine. So let's just to summarize it, right? Just what we've seen today, right, is that we saw two very different approaches, right? We saw Rav Rosen, who tries to develop the Rambam, which I think is not the majority position, but the way he understands the Rambam, that it's really about a problem of creating autonomous standing, autonomously standing non-Jewish communities. But the majority position is about damage, and therefore it's Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laretz. What the Atarit Paz notes is that realistically speaking, if it's about damage, this is only going to be in a case where there really is no one living there, right? But once you already lived in a mixed community, these prohibitions on a formal level don't apply, right? But, right, Blaich notes from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, still, there are other halachot that are based on similar things. And if it's going to cause damage, right, it doesn't have to be physical damage. You're right, there's already a lot of, you know, non-Jews living here, and either they're not going to cause you damage anyways because they're not anti-Semitic, they're wonderful, or whatever, or whatever the case may be, right? Not getting into that again. But he said there are other things you have to bring to the calculus, right? I mean, this whole halacha tells you that you do have to take into account what happens when you sell property and how you change demographics. And he said, even if it's not this Isser, there's a whole bunch of other Isser that say, look, if you know that by selling out, you're going to help, right? You're going to cause prices of houses to go down. Or, forget it, prices of houses to go down, right? You're going to cause the Jewish community to have to sell this shul or this shul to be used by only 10 families when it could be, you know, seat 1,000, and then you'll have to move into the next community. Right? There are costs that you have to take into account. This halacha and other related halachas point out that we need to at least be sensitive of demographic change. Okay, so that's just that issue. Tomorrow we'll do kibush yachid. Again, that's probably going to take us at least 3 days, probably more. Maybe three, four. And then, yeah, we have probably have two more sugyas till the end of the